Globalism v. Nationalism, Victory? By Jonathan Davis. Here we are again, friends. The outcome of the general election is now clear for all to see. A near flawless victory for Boris and the Tories. Many here were worried about another hung parliament and what that would mean for Brexit. Others were worried about a large Tory majority. They may be right. A lot of us, myself included, don't trust Boris. I voted for the Brexit Party. But like him or loathe him, it looks like he and his cabinet will govern for the next 5 years. So how did the Tories win? What does it mean and what is likely to happen in the future? Firstly, Boris avoided the mistakes of Theresa May's 2017 disaster. May called an election when she already had a majority. Many saw it as unnecessary, especially only a year after the EU referendum. There was certainly voter fatigue. Boris didn't have a majority, and there had been 3 years of needless pontificating and obstruction of Brexit, to the detriment of the country. After shenanigans in the Supreme Court, No Deal and Boris deal being voted down or delayed, the Benn Act, Letwin Amendment and everything else, he was successfully able to frame the narrative that the opposition were stopping Brexit and forcing an election. Boris and his team focused specifically on Brexit, something else May failed to do. She allowed Corbyn to dictate the agenda by not turning up to TV debates, allowing him free rein on national television, meaning everything else but Brexit was discussed. Her disastrous manifesto included stealing old people's homes and bringing back fox hunting. Opposition parties had a field day, while Mrs. May was nowhere to be seen. Boris' line of "get Brexit done" was short, sharp and effective. He repeated it ad nauseam on each TV appearance. He went on the debate shows, where his performances were okay, no more and no less. But they didn't have to be. He just had to appear more competent than Corbyn. Yes, he didn't go on Channel 4 for the climate debate. This is to his credit. He lost nothing by avoiding the Marxist propaganda channel and probably went up in the estimation of many. He ducked out of Andrew Neil, but by then it was too late to make a difference. What else was in the Tory manifesto? Most people don't remember and don't care. The Tories correctly called this as the Brexit election. They rightly surmised that people had had enough of the bickering, uncertainty and political paralysis. Most people hadn't changed their minds. Even many Remainers just wanted to be able to get on with their lives. The economy was suffering because businesses couldn't plan for the future. Boris offered a way forward, rather than trying to refight the 2016 referendum continually. You may not like his deal, but many do or are willing to put up with it. His opponents aided him with staggering incompetence, large amounts of entitlement and being hugely out of touch with most of the public. Let us begin with Labour. Where to start? The man at the top, Jeremy Corbyn. Despite being a Eurosceptic, with plenty of evidence of him disliking the EU, he once again chose a non-position on Brexit. Labour would somehow renegotiate a better deal than Boris in less time, have a referendum on it, then campaign against their own deal if they didn't deem it good enough. Corbyn repeatedly failed to say if he backed Brexit or not. The idea may have been to try and keep on board Leavers and Remainers. However, not to have a definite position on the biggest political issue since World War II was a leadership disaster. Another reason for the policy shambles is that Labour are a Remain party, with Remain MPs and a Remain membership. However, many of their voters in Labour heartlands of the north of England, the Midlands and Wales voted to leave. The tension between the two was always likely to cause problems. Labour didn't care. They thought the problem was not being Remain enough. If only Labour would back a second referendum and campaign for Remain was the thinking. Added to this, Labour had become increasingly London-centric. The world outside the M25 ceased to exist for many. Labour of London had increasingly become a Labour of the middle classes. People living in million-pound houses liked to feel woke and trendy by backing socialism. Most of them voted Remain, looking down on Leave voters elsewhere as thick, racist, uneducated bigots who had dared revolt against their betters. They had apparently ruined their lives, as they may have to pay a couple of quid for a visa and might not be able to take the dogs skiing this season. The horror. Real problems due to immigration were ignored, such as house prices, wage stagnation, pressure on public services, etc. Who cares about that when you can get different foods? This put even further strain on Labour's already tenuous relationship with the working class. Many in the party now viewed their traditional voters as an embarrassment. Labour have also become obsessed with minorities and identity politics. One only has to look at the Twitter feeds of Owen Jones, Ash Sucker, David Lammy and others to confirm this. Britain and its history is seen as bad, anything foreign as good. Immigration is wonderful, should be unlimited, and anyone who disagrees is simply a far-right racist. This led to a focus on things that most people simply don't care about or are trying to pose, such as gender-neutral toilets. Any grievance that could be mongered, or division that could be caused, was. It also led to an obsession with the Palestinian cause, which in turn meant opposition to Israel and by extension the Jews, which is at the heart of the anti-Semitism problems within the party. Thousands of Palestinian flags at party conference would not have gone down well. Why are they on about Palestine? What about my vote to leave? Stances like wanting to allow the likes of Shemama Begum back into the UK did further damage. Given this, it's not hard to see why genuine working-class people in traditional Labour areas were fed up. Amazingly, the majority of Labour were blissfully unaware. They didn't see or didn't care about the depth of feeling over Brexit and other issues. They didn't realise how far they were alienating their own voters. Such is the Londonite echo chamber, both in the real world and online. They didn't see it coming. 10 p.m. on election night must have been quite the shock. It is telling that the only Labour gains were in London. The Lib Dems were not much better. Again, they were suffering from the delusion that everyone had changed their minds over Brexit, and Britain was now a Remain country. Jo Swinson even claimed at one point she could be the next Prime Minister. Unable to get a second referendum, the Lib Dems went all out and said they would unilaterally revoke Article 50 and stop Brexit altogether. Despite more than a few of their own supporters saying this was a bad idea and undemocratic, they went ahead anyway. The living, breathing embodiment of this was Steve Bray, the man with the EU flag, megaphone and Stop Brexit hat, that appeared in the background of every outside news broadcast. He even stood as a candidate. No other policies seemed to matter. It was no surprise to me that they got nowhere. The Brexit party originally seemed poised to upset the apple cart. They swept to victory in the EU elections. They played a crucial role in keeping pressure on the Tories and in the downfall of Theresa May. Nigel Farage had identified that there was a political gap on Brexit. The main issue was that the Tories and Brexit Party could have taken votes off each other and allowed Labour and Lib Dem wins. Evidence for this came from the Peterborough and Brecon by-elections. Nigel stood down candidates in Tory areas, correctly in my view. A Labour government would have meant no Brexit, even more immigration, economic disaster and the further curtailing of free speech. In the end there were no Brexit Party MPs, showing how hard it is to win parliamentary constituencies. It takes time to build up grassroots support and a ground operation. What now? A Queen's speech in the very near future and maybe a few new faces in the cabinet. For good or ill, Boris now has his majority. It will mean his Brexit deal going through. The Benn Act is no longer a factor. The opposition cannot frustrate the progress of the deal any longer. The withdrawal agreement will be enacted by the end of January. The transition period will then begin, while negotiations for the final deal also start. The Tories say they want a free trade deal, outside the customs union and single market. Let's hope they do. I know many here don't like Boris deal, but it's what you are going to get. It's that or no Brexit. Plain and simple. Time to face the facts. Boris is a one-nation conservative. Don't expect a clampdown on immigration or boats to stop crossing the channel. I imagine there will be a statist agenda, lots of public spending and an emphasis on the benefits of multiculturalism, different foods, etc. It's not ideal, but we make the best of what we've got and work with the tools we have. More positive news. Nationalism is popular. People still love their country. The far-left globalist agenda has been rejected. Since the election, the EU has taken a more conciliatory tone. They now have to be pragmatic as they have to deal with Boris for the next 5 years. The UK is still a key trading partner, NATO member and political player. Hopefully they will see sense and decide a good trade deal is in everyone's interest. I won't put any money on it though. Trump is also keen on a trade deal. This should provide welcome economic news. There is now no chance of a second referendum. It's not going to happen. It never had the numbers in Parliament previously. It certainly won't now. I look forward to Femi, Adonis, AC Grayling, etc. fading into obscurity. Article 50 will not be revoked. Despite the best efforts of Jolyon and the Supreme Court, we will be leaving the EU. The Remainers will now have to become Rejoiners. Rejoining the EU will be significantly more difficult. It would mean accepting the euro and all other EU rules lock, stock and barrel. Given that vetoes are rapidly disappearing, the continuing EU military expansion and the EU economic problems, there will be no appetite for this. It has been proved that, in the end, democracy wins. Your vote does count for something, despite the globalists' best efforts. Meltdowns in the Commons should be epic. We should also get more MOG, which is the only reason I watch anything in Parliament these days. Many Tory cucks have been purged. Grieve, Gawk, Clark, Hammond, etc. have gone. Add to this every MP who changed party despite being elected on their manifesto, without calling a by-election. The likes of Chukwuemeka, Subri and Philip Lee are out. Ignoring the will of the people has consequences. Being voted out is poetic justice and deeply satisfying. We can look forward to the Labour Party tearing itself apart. The leadership and executive are firmly in the hands of the far left. Moderates face a long battle to reclaim it. Corbyn will be gone. Already they have turned on him. The left always eats itself and will continue to do so. We can watch as they blame everyone and everything for their defeat except for the real reasons. It would not surprise me if they decide that Labour wasn't pure enough and move further left. The Lib Dems are also done for the near future. They gambled everything on stopping Brexit and lost. What is the point of them now? In the longer term, there are questions over the future of the Union. The SNP gained, and for the first time the Unionists are in the minority in Northern Ireland. Nigel Dodds notably lost his seat. Pressure will be on for another referendum on Scottish independence. The globalists of the SNP seem hell-bent on being part of the EU. Northern Ireland is still without a functioning government, not that anyone seems to have noticed much. Will a desire for EU membership or a frictionless border mean a referendum on Irish unity? Time will tell. For me, the benefits of leaving the EU far outweigh any consequences of the breakup of the UK. Copyright Jonathan Davis 2019.